the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is the first time that you are here to listen to the Animation Podcast, well, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show, because my God, we got some crazy stories for you today. Well, maybe not, but we got some pretty exciting stuff to talk about with you guys, which, for example, in this episode, I am going to start things off by giving you a little sneak peek on what Disney will be talking about animation-wise at the upcoming D23 Expo. Then afterwards, we will be having a little bit of a discussion about what's going to be going on with the trailer of Coco that's just recently been released this week. Then afterwards, we will be having a little bit of an update at Universal Studios Hollywood. And yes, it looks like it will be a Kung Fu Panda 3D show that will be replacing Shrek 4D. Then afterwards, we will be discussing about a live-action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop and why everybody is asking the question, why? And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to go and check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. And you could also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. Woo!
Wow, just ended off with a hiccup right over there.
Okay, so with all that said and done, let's go and get things started by talking about the upcoming D23 Expo. Now, once every 2 years, this thing would be going on, and it would offer some of the biggest news that Disney could offer. Like, screw the San Diego Comic-Con thing right over there, because this is the home of where you can get the biggest information from Disney, whether it be for their upcoming animated features, for what's going on at the parks, or the live action films, and even the biggest news that you can get regarding movies like Star Wars and even the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But what happened this week is that Disney decided to release all the information and the big panels that people should go check out during D23 Expo, or at least the ones that they should definitely keep an eye on. And what we're going to do this week is that we're just going to be focusing on the ones for their animated features, the ones that will be coming up from Walt Disney Animation Studios and Pixar, in which on the website of D23, they actually put it up neat and tidy to make everything like that specialize in that all in this one page. So, what's going to be going on is that, as you guys may know, D23 is going to be happening in an entire weekend from Friday to Sunday. So, in their schedule, they said that the first one and the biggest one will be happening on Friday, which is a special panel called Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios, The Upcoming Films, hosted by John Lasseter. So, it states here, join host John Lasseter, Chief Creative Officer of Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios, as he presents this special panel. Watch never-before-seen footage from Pixar's upcoming feature Coco and Walt Disney Animation's Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2, and be prepared for surprise announcements, musical performances, and appearances by star voice talents. Cell phones, cameras, and all recording devices will be checked for this presentation. But then, afterwards, we are going to be jumping into Saturday, where they have four new specialized panels that are dedicated to Disney Animation. And the first one is going to be called The Power of the Princesses. Join host Walt Disney Animation Studios animator Amy Smead and Kira Letomaki. I apologize, Kira, if I mispronounce your name. As the voice actresses behind some of your favorite Disney heroines, Jodie Benson, the voice of Ariel, Meghna Wen, the voice of Mulan, Anika Noni Rose, the voice of Tiana, and Aulii Carvalho, the voice of Moana, take the stage to share stories from the sound booth and beyond. Now, the next two that they have is something a little bit similar, but it looks into different aspects. One is called creating the worlds in Pixar Universe and the evolution of Pixar's characters. So you got one that's entirely dedicated to looking into the environment, the background, the worlds that is set in a Pixar movie, and the other ones are just looking into a Pixar character. So looking into the ones about the worlds, it states that Pixar production designer and artist will literally take guests behind the scenes on a visual tour of the amazing worlds created in Pixar films, from oceans and outer space to mountaintops and monstropolises. And the other one, the evolution of Pixar characters, it states that Pixar characters are full of personality, from the waves in their hair to the shoes on their feet. Join some of the legendary Pixar artists behind some behind its most memorable characters as they share what it's like to draw these lovable characters to life. But then they also made a huge announcement. So at the same time, this is kind of announcing the project, but they decided they're going to go and also make a special little panel on this. And this is called Olaf's Frozen Adventure, a sneak peek at the new Frozen short film. Be among the first to see exclusive behind-the-scenes footage from Walt Disney Animation Studios' newest Frozen holiday short film event, the highly anticipated Olaf's Frozen Adventure. The film, which features the talents of the original Frozen cast, as well as brand new songs, is directed by the Emmy-winning team Stevie Wormers Skelton and Kevin Detters, the same guys who worked on Prep and Landing, and produced by Oscar-winning producer Roy Conley, who previously worked on Big Hero 6 and Tangled. And finally, the last panel that they have on Sunday is going to be called Bambi's 75th Anniversary. Celebrate the 75th anniversary and Walt Disney's signature collection release of Bambi with personal stories from the voice cast, anecdotes behind the making of this film, and its exquisite hand-drawn artwork, and much, much more. So those are pretty much all the panels that you got. And let me just give you a bit of my thoughts one by one, what we have right over here. So, of course, the first one, talking about all the upcoming films with John Lasseter there, that, of course, is going to be the biggest one. And this is going to be the one where any animation fan should keep an eye on. This is where we're going to get some of the biggest news of the year. And not only are they going to present some exclusive clips on Coco and also Wreck-It Ralph 2, but what I can imagine is that we're also going to be hearing some news regarding some upcoming features. We're going to see some exclusive information and even some plot details on what's going to be coming up. Keep in mind, in 2018, it's not just going to be Wreck-It Ralph 2, but we're also going to be getting the much highly anticipated Incredibles 2. So if anything, I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to see like the voice talents coming back in, and we're also going to see Brad Bird discussing about what they have in store on The Incredibles 2. So we could be seeing a lot more information on that. But also, at the same time, we could also be hearing some big announcements on what's going to be coming up in their lineup, like way into the future. I'm talking about in 2020 and 2021. So they could be announcing what are going to be the animated features of that time. I know that we already know regarding, Gigantic. We already know that that movie is going to be coming out in 2020, but I mean, maybe there could be a possibility that either Disney or Pixar are going to be announcing the next movies during that time. And not to mention that also in 2019, we could also be seeing exclusive peaks or just a little bit more information on Frozen 2 and also Toy Story 4. What's going to be the updates on that? How is production going? What could be the plot details? Are we going to see new characters? Who knows what's going to be going on? But that's pretty much my prediction. It's pretty much that we are guaranteed to know a bit more information on The Incredibles 2 and also in Wreck-It Ralph 2. But at the same time, maybe we could be learning a bit more about what's going on with Frozen 2 and Toy Story 4, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe they'll save a bit of that information for next year, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to hear some new projects that they will have in store for the next decade. So that's going to be the big one that people will keep an eye on. But then you got Saturday, which has a few of the small ones. And I gotta say, Power of the Princesses is actually really intriguing, and it is really cool. But one thing that I did notice that is actually rather intriguing is the diversity that they put on there. They have stated that they will have four Disney princesses being presented here, but you may have noticed that each of them have a different ethnicity. You got Jodie Benson, who is a Caucasian. Then you got Ming-Na Wen, who is an Asian. And then you got Anika Noni Rose, who is African-American. And then you got Aulii Carvalho, who is Polynesian. So you pretty much got this massive mix of flavors right over here. And even the princesses themselves represent different ethnicities. So it actually is pretty cool in terms of the diversity, but no matter what, it's always a blast to hear the behind-the-scenes stories of how it is to voice a Disney princess and stuff like that. There is also another panel that Disney is doing at the same time, which is called The Voice of the Disney Parks, where they would interview some people who did lend their voice to do some work on the Disney parks, whether it be voicing a character or just telling you to hold on tight and, you know, welcome to the monorail or the train station and stuff like that. Maybe they would do these stuff. But I will say with the princesses, it's actually pretty cool. And that would be another one that would be worth checking out right over there. But then also you got some of the special presentations of the Pixar ones. And those ones do actually seem pretty cool. And I think those are going to be the ones that, like, for people who really wanted to get into the profession of animation to learn about how is it they want to create worlds or how they would develop characters, that is going to be something that could be interesting for those kinds of animation people. And like, even if you're just an animation enthusiast, if you're just an animation fan, it could definitely be worth checking out to understand the mentality of what it is in order to build these things, you know, to craft a character or to build these worlds. So that would be an interesting thing. But then we also got Olaf's Frozen Adventure, which is probably the one that I am the most skeptical about, because I really need to go and ask this question. Do we really need a new Frozen short? And keep in mind, though, I'm not slamming on Frozen or anything like that. I love Frozen. It is such a magnificent film. Definitely does deserve to have the title of, like, two-time Oscar-winning, highest-grossing animated feature of all time. But the thing is that, do we need more Frozen stuff? Like I can definitely see that Disney is squeezing the living hell out of it so that they can really make so much more. Like, okay, fine. Like, yes, I know that soon we will have a sequel to it. And yeah, like the marketing is everywhere. Like, you'll see merchandising from left to right. But when it comes to these little additions, like making these shorts and stuff like that, you know, that's where I feel like it's probably pushing it. Like, even with The one that appeared before the live-action reboot with Cinderella of, you know, what was it? Frozen Fever. Even that one, it's like, you know, I don't hate it. It's okay, but it's not as good as the first one. And you really do feel like Disney is just making it for the sake of just really squeezing the living crap out of this movie so that, like, they can make a massive franchise out of it. So I don't know. Maybe this could come out as pretty good, but I'm not going to have any high hopes for it. But yeah, you could definitely tell that there's no hiding. This is just a cash cow so that Disney is trying to find every single way to profit on Frozen. But then finally, you also got the 75th anniversary of Bambi. So pretty much they're having this big discussion about the making of this movie, what went into it, and the massive impact that it had in the animation industry and all that kind of stuff. And also, like it said before, to celebrate the release of the Walt Disney Signature Collection of Bambi. And, you know, like, if you are a fan of the movie, then yeah, absolutely, this would be like a dream panel for you. So definitely go check that out. And it is actually pretty cool, but I don't know what else that they could really expand upon, because technically the Academy has already done a panel like this before. It was just not too long ago, actually, really close to the release of the Blu-ray of Bambi, where the Academy in Los Angeles, they presented this entire panel of Bambi, where they presented the movie. It was hosted by Leonard Maltin, and they even brought in some of the cast members of Bambi, like the guys who provided the voice of young Bambi and young Thumper, just discussing it. So maybe this is just a bit of a rehash of what they've already done there, but hey, you know, it's pretty cool that they're giving another opportunity to discuss about Bambi and all that kind of stuff. So, also, I just want to make a quick mention right now. I might as well make a little plug-in that if you go on Filmbook, I have actually done a review of the Blu-ray of the Signature Collection of Bambi. So, after you're listening to this podcast, you can also go and check that one out. But yeah, overall, this is pretty much the entire presentation of what they have in the animation side for D23 Expo. And it definitely does sound exciting, and especially on Friday, that's going to be the time when everybody will be all ears into it. And who knows how it goes? This is going to be pretty cool. So if you guys are excited to know when this is going to be happening, or if you are planning to go to the D23 Expo, or if you're in the Anaheim area, then just to let you know that the expo is going to be happening between July 14th to the 16th. Now for our next story right over here, we are going into a smooth transition. We've already discussed about everything that Disney and Pixar are going to offer animation-wise at the D23 Expo, but let's go and discuss about one of the things that they will be presenting there, which is Coco, which interestingly enough, Pixar has actually released a brand new trailer about it. But there is something a little bit weird, is that I don't know if I really want to say that this is a full trailer per se, because I think this is even shorter than the teaser trailer that they have released. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it definitely does feel like it, because usually trailers are about 2 to 2.5 minutes long. This one is only 1.5 minutes, so this could be borderline full trailer and teaser trailer, so it could be in between. So anyways, let's get back into this Coco trailer, and what it's pretty much showing us is that in the first half, it's pretty much presenting everything that we have seen in the teaser trailer, where it's set in the Day of the Dead, and you got this little kid, Miguel, who is really interested in this musician. So he really wants to go and find out about the mysteries of who this guy is. And he decided to go and pick up his guitar, but once he plays it, he is suddenly in the land of the dead, and he is the first human being to actually appear in there, and he sees all the living skeletons that actually live among the dead. But with all that said, in the second half, that's when we are starting to see the new things. And we're pretty much seeing Miguel's journey all around the entire world in the land of the dead. And then suddenly he meets up with his family. And what the trailer is indicating to us is that the story is pretty much saying that now they gotta go take Miguel and bring him back to the land of the living, or else, like, he might end up being, you know, legit dead. So that's pretty much all that the story that they are showing for us. You know, that's pretty much it. And, you know, they also do offer a bit of what the comedy would entail. And honestly, I really don't know. It does seem a little bit lackluster. And I know I hate to do this comparison, but at this point, it does feel a little bit unavoidable. But in the second half, we are seeing so many similarities to the Book of Life, where we have this tale of the main character, which in this case, instead of being Manolo, we actually got Miguel. Like, they enter upon the land of the dead, and then he would be reunited with his entire family that has passed away, and now they're on a journey to find a way to bring the main character back onto the land of the living. So there are a lot of comparisons to that, and it does feel a bit like a turnoff, honestly. Well, maybe not necessarily like a full-on turnoff. I'm not gonna look at this and say, yeah, I'm not gonna go watch this. This looks like it's gonna be a bad movie no matter what. But also in terms of the comedy, it's I can see that it could have some funny moments. I will admit, like, right at the end, like, when you see the conductor's jaw just dropping, that I find to be a little bit cute. But the rest of it, I honestly don't really know what to say, honestly. But the one thing that I want to immediately say is that, yes, technically with this new trailer, it does seem a little bit lackluster, and maybe it doesn't really show all that much. It's pretty much indicating that maybe visually it's not going to be the most grand thing that Pixar has ever made. Like, the only selling point visual-wise is just going to be all the skeleton gags that it's going to come up. But I'm not immediately going to judge it. Because the thing is, when it comes to Disney, and I might have already discussed this before in the podcast, is that, yeah, even though their movies are great, they're legendary, but my God, Disney sucks at making trailers. They really do, because, like, when you look at them, you would see a little bit of doubt, you're not sure how the movie's gonna go, but then when the movie is released, it turns out to be fantastic. Like, some of the greatest examples that I can think of is just Zootopia and Moana last year. Like, with Zootopia, the trailers never indicate to you that it is such a clever and deeply thoughtful feature where it would go and discuss about prejudice and discrimination. You know, it never indicated that. Like, it's mostly showing, you know, this family-friendly adventure in a world with talking and living anthropomorphic animals, and that's pretty much it. Or even with Moana, it does seem really doubtful. Like, I remember seeing the trailers, and, you know, honestly, they did turn me off, and I remember discussing it with my friends, and they've mentioned to me that, you know, when they saw the trailers, they were highly doubtful. It looks like it could be one of Disney's first bad movies in recent years. But then when it actually came out, it was great. It was a lot of fun. Like, I remember, like, I saw it a second time with my friends in theaters, and we came out singing. It was really awesome. And even with this, is that the trailer that they're showing us is not all that great. It kind of does suck. And who knows, maybe when it's going to be coming out in theaters, it could actually turn out to be fantastic. It could probably turn out to be as good as many other Pixar films. But honestly, when it comes to the movie on its own, I definitely do hope that it does end up being at least good. Because keep in mind, in 2017, we're not really getting we're not actually getting a lot of high quality animated features here. A lot of them are pretty bad. I mean, debatably, yes, we do have some pretty good ones as well, like the Lego Batman movie and Captain Underpants. But we did get a lot of pretty mediocre films, like mediocre to just pretty bad, honestly, with stuff like The Boss Baby or Smurfs the Lost Village. And then what's going to be coming up is going to be some nightmare fuel right over there in terms of animation quality. Like, we're going to get the freaking Emoji Movie, and then also the Nut Job 2 and all that. Now, for our next story right over here, this is going to be a continuation of some of the previous Animats pick of the week. Now, I've already discussed to you guys about what has been going on at Universal Studios Hollywood, that they are going to be taking down Shrek 4D. And rumors have started to spread that apparently it could be possible it'll be replaced with Kung Fu Panda. Well, apparently Universal has made the official announcements, and yes, it does seem like this would be the case, where Shrek 4D is going to be replaced with a 3D show based on Kung Fu Panda. Now, allow me to go and read the little statement that they brought up right over here. Using my source in Slash Films, it stated, opening in 2018, this newly designed venue will play host to a variety of action-packed DreamWorks animation-themed attractions, beginning with the multi-sensory adventure inspired by the global box office franchise Kung Fu Panda, and created in partnership with Universal Creative and DreamWorks Artists. This new technologically advanced attraction will take guests on a legendary journey that fuses captivating storytelling with state-of-the-art projection mapping and LED lighting effects for a highly engaging, immersive, unstoppable action, unstoppable, awesome experience. But on top of that, what is going to be interesting about it is going to be the building itself, the outside venue. Apparently, they're not going to be decorating it all in, like, Kung Fu Panda style and stuff like that. What they are doing is that they are turning Shrek 4D into an entire DreamWorks theater, where the entire aesthetic and the architecture will be inspired by a little bit of, like, classic theaters from the turn of the century, mixed with the architecture from DreamWorks Animation in Burbank, California. So it's a little bit of a mixture of that. So it's going to be an entire building dedicated to not just Kung Fu Panda, but also the entire legacy of DreamWorks Animation. But on top of that, they have also made an announcement that is actually going to be released very soon, is that they will have an entire plaza that is dedicated to DreamWorks Animation, where guests can actually go and meet up with characters like from numerous of DreamWorks franchises, and the ones that they have listed includes Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon, Madagascar, Shrek, and Trolls. So all of them can go and meet up right over there. And also, at the same time, like, it's a place where everybody can go and have fun and dance at the same time. But that's not the only announcement that they have done. At the same time, they have also stated that there is also going to be a special holiday-themed Wizarding World of Harry Potter. So what's going to happen is that in Universal Studios Hollywood, they got an entire Wizarding World of their own. So when the holidays are going to be coming in, so once Universal is all done with the entire house, Universal, it's not House of Horrors, but I immediately forgot, but like kind of their Halloween special, and they would immediately jump into Christmas. They're going to make it entirely Christmas themed in Harry Potter, which even includes an entire projection map show onto the Hogwarts itself, along with some new foods that you can go and eat into the restaurants. Now, this is actually a really interesting case here with the whole DreamWorks scenario, because honestly, this actually turned out much better than I thought, because, like, overall, I feel like this is a massive step up from Shrek 4D, where this is not just dedicated to just one DreamWorks franchise. This is going to be, like, DreamWorks' entire hub in Universal. It's not necessarily going to be as big as what MotionGate is doing in Dubai, but it is pretty fascinating to see that they are making something rather big, where they're having a place where this is where you can get all your DreamWorks Animation right over here. And plus that they are going to have a brand new Kung Fu Panda 3D show. But what I do find that is actually rather interesting is actually in the first sentence of the details that they have released. Because keep in mind, they said this newly designed venue will play host to a variety of action-packed DreamWorks Animation-themed attractions. And the first one is going to be Kung Fu Panda. So they're pretty much hinting that inside this theater, they could be showing a lot more different experiences. You know, they're going to be showing a lot more attractions, where on one side you'll see Kung Fu Panda, and then maybe on another side they'll open up a new How to Train Your Dragon show. So who knows how this could actually turn out. But the one thing that I have heard from this is that There are some criticisms regarding this entire makeover to make it all DreamWorks themed and stuff like that. And the ones who brought up some good points are a couple of guys that I follow on Twitter, on social media and stuff like that. They're really awesome. These are some theme park experts, Some Jerk With The Camera and Spazmaster. And they have stated that the only problem with this is that what Universal Studios Hollywood is doing here is kind of like the same thing that Disney's California Adventure did by just changing the theme of the Tower of Terror into Guardians of the Galaxy. Technically, it's still the same ride altogether. It's still the same dropping ride, but instead of getting it entirely Twilight Zone themed, you're just getting a Guardians of the Galaxy theme. And the same thing is going on right over here. They're pretty much re-theming Shrek 4D so that now it's just a Kung Fu Panda 3D show. And that is the one big criticism, is that this is just going to turn out as a 3D show and nothing more. Because that's kind of the problem with Shrek, is that that's the only thing that it offered. It was just a 3D show, down to the point that later on, DreamWorks would just take that thing and they would just put it wherever they want. Like, they would sell it on DVD, and you can even go and check it out on Netflix. I kid you not. You can go and watch an entire Universal ride on freaking Netflix. And that's what they were, and that's what people are worried, that they're going to do the same thing with Kung Fu Panda. And honestly, as I've stated before, the one thing that I do hope with this is that they would do a lot more. They did state that they are going to do some extra things like state-of-the-art projection mapping and LED lighting effects. Now, honestly, hopefully they will make something in which it's not going to be something that they can just easily take and put onto Netflix. Like, they need to go and create something that feels like they can only get it at Universal. Like, if you want to have the full experience of this, you got to go right over there. And even though the aesthetic sounds like a pretty good idea with the whole DreamWorks thing, maybe, like, it could backfire, because, like, at the end of the day, they are building just an old theater, in a sense, so it's not necessarily going to be as immersive when you enter in. Like, the whole queue area is not going to be the whole queue is not going to fully prepare yourself to make you enter into the world of Kung Fu Panda. It's just going to be, like, seeing a 3D show, and that's pretty much it. And keep in mind, like, this is actually coming out pretty soon. They say that it's opening up in 2018. So, who knows how that's going to go right over there. If it's really going to, make it quick, or the new innovations are going to be right then and there. Or, like, should they have spent a little bit more time to construct a bigger idea of what they want to do with Kung Fu Panda? Who knows? But, you know, is it a good idea? Maybe it could be the start of something, but like I said in the very beginning, this does seem like a massive step up to Shrek 4D. So at least we could be getting something new and something better. Like, if not great, at least it is a step up. So if you guys are excited to see this new Kung Fu Panda show at Universal Studios Hollywood, then all you have to do is just wait until 2018, when that 3D show will be ready. But in the meantime, you could still go into the plaza and meet with your favorite DreamWorks characters. Now for our next story right over here, we are going to be looking into a controversial announcement. Now, this is actually a little something that, instead of having fans being hyped up and excited to see their favorite characters back onto television, they're pretty much asking the big question, but why though? And what I am referring to is going to be the live-action TV series of Cowboy Bebop. Now, going into my source here in Anime News Network, it has stated that apparently Tomorrow Studios, a partnership between producer Marty Adelstein and ITV Studios, will produce a live-action television series adaptation of the 1998 television anime Cowboy Bebop, in which it will be written by Chris Yost. And you might recall Chris Yost is the writer of the Thor sequels, including Thor Dark World and the upcoming Thor Ragnarok. But at the same time, they have also stated that the studio Sunrise, the animators of the original series, will be executive producing this live-action series. And on top of that, one of the producers, Marty Adelstein, has stated, "We are excited to work with Sunrise in bringing this beloved anime to the U.S. and global marketplace as a live-action series. The animated version has long resonated with audiences worldwide, and with the continued ever-growing popularity of anime, we believe a live-action version will have an incredible impact today." Now, keep in mind, this is actually not the first time that Americans wanted to try to actually adapt Cowboy Bebop into live action. There was at one point in recent years, like back in the beginning of this decade, that they wanted to make a Cowboy Bebop live-action movie starring Keanu Reeves. However, the director of the original anime, Shinichiro Watanabe, has actually stated back in 2014, "I'm afraid I don't know what they're thinking in Hollywood. Apparently the project hasn't come to a stop, but I don't know how it's going to progress from here on. I hear that there are a lot of Hollywood problems." And to this day, it doesn't seem like a live-action remake or adaptation of Cowboy Bebop will be happening, but apparently a series will. And going back into the big question that people have been asking about this, they're just wondering, why? And honestly, it is actually a pretty bad time right now to actually go and take a Japanese animated property and go and turn it into live action, especially if Americans are actually doing it, considering that nowadays it is highly controversial when they're doing so. And this year is pretty much proving that maybe it's something that audiences really don't want. We already have one big example with the live-action remake of Ghost in the Shell. Say what you will about the movie itself, but it did bring up a lot of controversy, and it bombed at the box office. And not to mention that there is so much outrage out there regarding the casting of Scarlett Johansson being white and playing as the Major, or Motoko, or is it Makoto, or something like that. But you pretty much get the idea. But, and also, at the same time, though, pretty soon, in August, Netflix is going to bring out another movie, which is based on a Japanese manga and also an anime, but made by Americans, turn it into a live-action remake, which is Death Note. And so far, the hype on that, it is rather low. A lot of people are really skeptical about it, so who knows what's going to be going on right over there. But you guys pretty much get the picture. Live-action adaptations of Japanese animated products are not highly looked upon, and neither is this so far. People are not really getting down into it, because what's the point of really trying to reboot this? And what I do find that is actually rather stupid of what Adelstein has stated was actually the last thing he said: "With the continued ever-growing popularity of anime, we believe a live-action version will have an incredible impact today." I'm just going to say right now, he's not wrong. You know, it could actually have an incredible impact, but not in the way that he probably wants. You know, it could have the same impact as freaking Ghost in the Shell. I'm just saying. Now, I know that the format is going to be a little bit different, that this is going to be television, and there is, like, a huge difference between making a TV series and making a movie, but still, it's not going to stop people from even wondering why is it that they would want to go and do this. They're not really warming up to the idea that maybe there is a possibility that Americans can actually take an anime and turn it into something that's good, that is live action and stuff like that. So I don't know. With this, it does seem highly doubtful, and it does seem highly skeptical. And even nowadays, it's not just anime, but even live-action remakes of just animated properties in general, especially with what Disney is doing with movies like Maleficent or Alice in Wonderland or Beauty and the Beast. I mean, yeah, sure, Beauty and the Beast is so far the highest grossing film of the year, but even nowadays, the hype for it has really died down, and not a lot of people look highly into it. It's pretty much unanimous. People have stated that, like, even the animated film is way superior and way more memorable than that. And with what the live-action reboot did, with what it did, it's not really all that great. So I wouldn't be surprised that, like, once 2018 comes, that movie will just poof off into obscurity. So, yeah, that's kind of the biggest problem with this, is that, like, if it really wants to go and connect with its audience, if it really wants to prove that it is good, it has to do so much in order to make this work. It's going to be a huge hurdle for it, but otherwise, so far, it looks like it could go into the same direction as the live-action remake of Ghost in the Shell, but who knows how this is going to go. We'll just have to wait and see with what was it? Tomorrow Studios? Yeah, we'll see what they have in store. And so, finally, we are going to end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And what I decided to do this week is go into one of the biggest stories that happened during the last weekend. Now, if you guys may recall, last week, the biggest thing that everybody has been talking about was Wonder Woman. Like, it was the only thing that has dominated social media. Rather it be, like, on Facebook or Twitter, everybody was pretty much talking about it. They were hyping up about it. And people got really excited and really happy about it, because finally, Wonder Woman came in, and it became the first ever DC Cinematic Universe movie that is actually good, that can actually compete with Marvel, finally. And it pretty much taught us the huge lesson that if you really need to go and make a good movie, then you just bring in a woman. It takes a woman to go and make a good movie. Maybe make a better movie than men, actually. That is the biggest lesson that we got from DC Cinematic Universe this year. No, but anyways, with all that said, though, of course the hype goes all into Wonder Woman. But then you have another movie that came out during the same time, which is Captain Underpants. And you don't really see a lot of people talking about it. In fact, at the box office, what ended up happening is that even though Wonder Woman did break new records and it became the highest grossing big budget movie that is directed by a woman, Captain Underpants, however, like, it just modestly was on the side, and it did manage to grab second place by only making $23 million. Now, with all that said, for an animated feature, that kind of does suck, and it basically just makes it a flop. There's no way that DreamWorks Animation could find money onto Captain Underpants at this point. So, yeah, sadly, Captain Underpants just became a bomb because it got overshadowed by Wonder Woman. Or is it? Because there's actually one thing about Captain Underpants that is actually highly fascinating that actually had some people talking about it. You see, unlike any other DreamWorks film, Captain Underpants actually has a rather intriguing budget, where the budget is actually just $38 million. $38 million for that movie. For an animated film, that is stupidly cheap. More cheap than any other mainstream animated feature that has been released so far. Like, I kid you not. To give you a good comparison, The Boss Baby, another DreamWorks Animation film, actually cost them $125 million. So just a reminder, The Boss Baby, $125 million. Captain Underpants, $38 million. That is legit a little bit more than a quarter of The Boss Baby's budget. But then again, you'll also have some people saying that Captain Underpants is 4 times better than the Boss Baby, but that's another story right over there. So yeah, how is it that Captain Underpants ended up having such a low budget? Like, how is that even possible? Well, I'll tell you how. The reason why it actually became the cheapest DreamWorks animation movie ever made is actually because this is the first one ever that DreamWorks had to go outsource it. The animation was not actually done inside DreamWorks Animation. It was actually outsourced by Micros Images. This is an animation studio made in Montreal, Canada, so it's around my neck of the woods. And they were the ones who provided all the effects, all the lighting, and all the animation. While DreamWorks Animation in California, they were the ones responsible to do the main aspect. They were the ones responsible for the story, for the concept art, you know, for the main aspects, for the core of Captain Underpants. And they left Micros to do the rest right over there. So that's how they ended up creating a low budget. But I will say, though, once you do think about it, it actually does make sense that Captain Underpants can be a relatively cheap movie to make. And what I mean by cheap, it's not like Hotel Transylvania, where like they have like millions of dollars and it's just spent to look like a cheap little Saturday morning cartoon show. No. What I mean by cheap is that there are a lot of things that Captain Underpants has done in order to take away some of the cost-effective things that DreamWorks Animation would normally do. Like when you do think about like How to Train Your Dragon or Kung Fu Panda, it really doesn't do that much, really. Number one, though, is mainly because of the design of the characters. Now, the entire production design and the entire look of Captain Underpants is meant to be reminiscent to the art style of Dave Pilkey in the original books that they were based on. And what Dave Pilkey did is very, very simple. Like, this is really simplistic animation that they have crafted there. So there's no necessary need to go and go extreme with the design to make them look highly realistic. You don't need to go and put in so many textures, or you don't have to make the eyes look realistic, like to give them irises and stuff like that. You just need to put in a line and that's pretty much it. And even with a lot of the action scenes, like you don't really get a lot of high-flying moments with Captain Underpants, or even one of the best examples, and this is a little bit of a spoiler inside Captain Underpants, is that there is one scene where Captain Underpants was ready to fight against the Turbo Toilet 2000, but then suddenly everything had to be stopped because George and Harold decided to represent the entire scene using Fliporama. So you see, like all you do is just see them just flipping pages to show how the action is going on. And it actually really is funny. And it actually works because it is very reminiscent to how it is in the books. And you also see a little bit of satire on it, where there was at one point they ripped the pages. And then like George and Harold have a little bit of an argument about, it was like, why is it that you have dolphins? I like dolphins, man. Like, come on, it's just creative liberties. Okay, fine. Just keep the dolphins. And there was at one point you just see Harold just standing up and you see the whole page is like not entirely covered, but there's a part of it that actually has shoe markings right over there. I thought it was really funny. But yeah, the whole point that I'm going with it is that Captain Underpants was cheap to make because the script didn't require too much to ask for it, because it does remain rather minimal. And even the effects themselves, like they decided to go a little bit with the Peanuts movie route, where all the effects are rather cartoony in a sense, where you don't really see that much highly realistic water. It's kind of like the little splash marks, you know? It's just like the mixture of a cone with a sphere. And, like, you know, they do all these minimalistic takes and all these, like, cartoony actions where it doesn't need that big of a budget to go and create that film. So what ended up happening is that with the box office result of $23 to $24 million as an opening at the box office, it's not necessarily a flop. Like, DreamWorks Animation is still going to be finding ways to go and find some profit with Captain Underpants. They will still be able to go and make money. Now, if it were Trolls or the Boss Baby that actually started out with that, then yes, it would be a massive disaster for them. It would be a massive box office bomb, and sadly, they would have to restart it. And by the way, there is one more thing I forgot to mention, and that is actually regarding why they decided to do this, and that was actually back in the beginning of 2015 when disaster struck at DreamWorks Animation, and they pretty much had to really minimize their workforce. They had to shut down their Redwood division. Hundreds of artists and animators had to lose their jobs. And Jeffrey Katzenberg, the then CEO at the time, he had to find different ways to go and, you know, minimize, like, spending too much money. So one of the ideas was take Captain Underpants and go and outsource it. And here we are right now. This is the result that happened. And even though right now it's hard to really imagine that Captain Underpants is going to be making the same numbers as something like The Boss Baby, there will still be a chance that DreamWorks Animation can still find some profit because of its massively low budget. But one thing that is actually very interesting, though, is that you actually got articles like on Cartoon Brew or in The Hollywood Reporter that honestly, they're kind of exaggerating this whole thing, thinking that this could actually be a massive game changer in the animation industry, where the headlines even say, like, Captain Underpants and the new pursuit of making cheaper animated movies. And then you got another one, the one on Cartoon Brew, written by Crazy Old Amid, that is written, Captain Underpants could dramatically alter the U.S. feature animation industry. Okay, guys, calm the fridge down. No, it's not. It's, like, honestly, that is way too much of a massive exaggeration. There is no way that this is going to be a game changer, and this is going to be the new format of making animated features, period. Because, let me just start out by saying that outsourcing animation is not a new concept. Like, this is actually a recent thing that animation studios are doing, but it's not really new. This is not the first time that we are seeing something like this happen. And there are some great examples, like Illumination Entertainment. Even the article in Hollywood Reporter actually did brought up that this is kind of a strategy that they have done ever since the very beginning, where the main, where like the whole core of the movie is done inside America, but then the animation would be outsourced in Illumination MacGuff in France. So the entire animation process would be made in France, while all the main things like making the story, storyboards, concept, and all that kind of stuff is done in America. And the same thing can be pretty much said with Sony Pictures and with Sony Pictures Animation, where the entire animation is actually done in Vancouver, Canada, in that division of Sony Pictures Imageworks, where earlier in this decade, Sony decided to move Sony Pictures Imageworks onto Vancouver so that making their movies would be a lot cheaper. Not just their animated films, but also the visual effects of movies. So at least they can find a more cost-effective way. So they ended up doing the same thing, that the core aspect is done in America, but then the animation itself is actually made in Canada. So what ends up happening is that nowadays, movies made by either Sony Animation or Illumination would end up costing around $60 to $80 million, around that range. Not necessarily as cheap as what we got with Captain Underpants, but it's still relatively a low budget for an animated feature. It's still less expensive than something that DreamWorks or Pixar would spend onto an animated film. And of course, this is not the first time that something like Captain Underpants in general happened. As you guys may know, last year, one of the most extreme examples is actually with Sausage Party, where you actually have an animated film that ends up costing $19 million. Like, for an animated film, that is insane to think about, that anyone could actually make, like, something that could be at least more than an hour and come out with something like that. It really is such an insane estimate. But hold on a sec. I just want to go onto Box Office Mojo, and I want to take a look a little bit onto what was the what would be the budget. Hold on. Well, not the budget, but what I'm looking at is just how much did it make at the box office. And apparently, Sausage Party ended up making a total of $140 million. Now, for any other animated feature, that is immediately announced as a flop. Like, it is a disaster. However, because of its relatively low budget of $19 million, Sony Pictures did find a way to actually make a profit. It actually did turn out to be a success. Now, like I said before, though, this is a rather extreme example. Like, I don't think any other studio should copy what Sausage Party did and just make a movie out of $19 million, especially with the whole massive controversy that went behind it, and that's another entire story right there. So that's kind of the big thing, is that studios nowadays are in a bit of a pursuit to find cheaper alternatives to create animated films, and like, we got stuff like Captain Underpants and Sausage Party, where even though they don't really make a lot at the box office, but because of their low budget, they're still finding ways to actually make a profit. So it is actually working out for it. And even with Captain Underpants, when you do think about it, it is actually made perfectly for that scenario right there. Because let's face facts, there is no way in hell that Captain Underpants would be able to surpass Wonder Woman at the box office. Like, financially, Wonder Woman pretty much got it to a T. Even if it turned out to be as bad as Suicide Squad and Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, it would still be able to surpass Captain Underpants at the box office. But Captain Underpants already has a low budget, so it's perfectly fine. The important thing for it to do is to just, you know, remain calm and just stay on the sidelines in order to have a bit of profit on the side. In a way, it's actually very similar to Sing, in a sense, where even though the budget is a little bit bigger than Captain Underpants with around $75 million, it actually never made it into the top of the box office. Like, it never made it up to number one because it was battling against Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. But Illumination still found a way to make a massive profit out of it. So that could pretty much be the case. So the big question is, to answer what Hollywood Reporter and what Cartoon Brew is asking, is it possible that this could be a big game changer in the animation industry? Not really. It is possible that we will be seeing a little bit more of movies like this, but I'm not saying that this is going to be something that will entirely be a whole new chapter in the animation industry in general. That's just absolutely ridiculous. Because here's the thing. A lot of these studios already have their own strategies on how to make an animated film, and they're pretty much sticking to it. You know, you got Disney and Pixar, which they are the ones who would make the most expensive animated films nowadays, which can range with a budget of $150 to even $200 million. But they're perfectly fine with it because they're still finding ways to make massive profits. I mean, other than Minions, Disney is the one that actually has all the movies that surpassed $1 billion at the box office. You know, movies like Toy Story 3, Frozen, what else was there? Zootopia, even Finding Dory. Now, I'm not saying that this is a perfect strategy, and yes, with The Good Dinosaur, it was a moment that showed that it can have some consequences when the plan doesn't work. But the thing is that usually they're perfectly fine with spending all that money onto their movies and to go crazy with the marketing. And even with what I've already mentioned with Illumination Entertainment, they're already in the process of being one of the biggest animation studios that could even compete with Disney. So they don't really need to change their ideas. Like, they've already got their own little plan by making movies that are between like $60 to $80 million and go and, you know, find ways to be creative with the marketing and end up with massive profits. And like I said, other than Disney, Minions actually surpassed $1 billion. But I will say, however, for this strategy right over here, I can think of a couple of companies that would benefit from this. And those are the ones that are struggling and also the ones that are starting. Like, for the ones that are struggling, of course, like, DreamWorks Animation is an example of a studio that for a while have really struggled to the point that, you know, they had to be bought out by NBC Universal. So that is an example right over there that they got to go and do something like this in order to go and produce more for less. So at least they can still deliver a lot more animated features, but they don't have to spend as much as they normally do. Another example of a company that would do this and are actually doing this is Sony Pictures Animation. Like right now, you could definitely tell that they are struggling. Smurfs the Lost Village is not necessarily doing well at the box office. And obviously, frickin' Emoji Movie is on its way to become a frickin' box office disaster. Depending on how much Sony Animation is spending on that film, who knows. Like, if it ends up being a high budget, like, even if it's like $80 million or more, like, my god, you'll definitely see Sony losing so much money from the Emoji Movie right over there. But the thing is that they are actually going to be doing it with The Star. Now, that's going to be coming out close to the release date of Coco. And with that one, it's the same thing with Captain Underpants. The core aspect is actually going to be made at Sony in California, while the animation is going to be provided by Cinesite in Montreal, Canada. Same thing. So they are pretty much doing the same kind of strategies. And as for the ones that are starting, I can imagine companies like Netflix, who really want to go and enter into the animation industry, you know, they would bring in something like The Little Prince, which, you know, is not that expensive to make and especially would mix in several different mediums. They would go and create that. So that's pretty much why I'm saying that we're not going to really see a lot of it. We're not going to see a big change in the animation industry to where everybody's going to be like that, considering the fact that they already have their own format in order to make their animation studios fine enough right over there. But also, the reason why they're really not doing it is mainly because of the script. It's mainly because the movie should not really offer too much in order to go and have a low budget. Kind of like the same way as Captain Underpants or even Sausage Party in a way. The script doesn't heavily demand it so that it needs to do a lot visually in order to go and create an animated film. So that's kind of the big thing. It is an interesting talk to see how Captain Underpants can still be rather successful, but it's not going to leave that big of an impact in the animation industry where everybody's going to have a desperate need to go and make animated features that could cost less than $40 million. So I just want to go and clarify on that, but it definitely is an interesting thinking piece. It definitely is an interesting discussion to have among the animation community, you know? It is something interesting to think about. And that will be all that I've got for this week, so I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me at Twitter at Animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and hit that like, rate and review that episode. I'm talking about the people of iTunes right over here. I almost forgot. But if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!